34 of the Rookie Big Board Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Hicks, the FF Educator, and I am here to talk about week one of the NFL season. We finally had some real, legit, 100% authentic NFL action, and it is so exciting for me not only to be able to spend both now Saturday and Sunday just consuming football, but we finally get some real, tangible, actionable items here coming out of this 2021 rookie class. So on this episode, what I'm going to do here, I'm not going to run through everybody on the rookie big board. That would be ridiculous. I have about 9 players identified here in the week one rookie report that I want to react to their week one performance. Now, this is not the 9 best performers of the week. I think these are the most noteworthy players, the players that I want to make sure that we take a moment to really analyze and reflect on their week one performance here. A couple notes before we jump right into things. I want to give a quick little caveat that this is episode 34. It's the week one rookie report. We're not doing weekly rookie reports, right? So I'm not doing one for all 17 weeks. That would be a little bit overkill, because remember, when we're analyzing fantasy players, it's oftentimes fun to react to 1 week, especially the first week. But what we're going to be really looking for is trends over time, right? If we reacted to Justin Jefferson in the first 2 weeks last year, then I would be sitting here telling you to sell him. I never sold Justin Jefferson, for the record. But I'm making a point here that Justin Jefferson really didn't produce over the first couple weeks of the 2020 season, his rookie season, right? So week one is not a pure indicator of whether a player is going to be successful or not. We're going to dig into some good performances and some bad performances, and we'll talk about how to really dig into those and interpret from those. The other note that I will point out here is that on the rookie big board for the patrons, your access on Notion also includes rookie notes. So I am going to be going through most weeks of this season and just adding notes to each rookie's profile here under the rookie notes, just so we can keep a consistent log here. You know, the rookie big board rating is quantitative. This is going to give us a qualitative element to help kind of balance things out. And then the other note that I will add in here is that this is probably going to be the last rookie big board episode for about a month. All right. So I am taking some time away from the mic here. I am actually getting married in about 10 days from when I'm recording this episode. So I'm going to be stepping back from the mic, stepping back from most content creation. I'm going to be recording almost every game. We're going to like binge it when we get back here, but I'm taking time to prep for the wedding and, of course, the honeymoon as well. So you probably will not hear my voice, at least on this show, for a month. But don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. We will be back at it here in October. And you better believe we are going to have a lot to talk about. And you better believe I will still be keeping an eye in tracking these rookies and this rookie performances here over the next month. All right, let's get into it here. And the first player that I want to jump into is Jalen Waddle from the Miami Dolphins. Now, you all know that I was one of the folks really preaching Jalen Waddle higher than most. He's my wide receiver 2 throughout the entire draft process. And I have to say, he was one of the more anxious players for me week one. I wanted a good performance from Jalen Waddle, but I not only wanted a good performance from Jalen Waddle, I also wanted to see that connection with Tua, because it was one of the things that I felt strongly about. And you all also know I'm a big Tua Tagovailoa fan, right? So I really wanted to see these two connect. And I have to say, I was really excited about what I saw. Jalen Waddle goes 4 receptions for 61 yards and 1 touchdown. He finds the end zone for the Miami Dolphins. A huge part of the reason the Miami Dolphins end up winning their week one matchup, you know, outside of Damian Harris. But in terms of the Miami offense itself, Jalen Waddle to Tua was a huge part of that connection here. Devontae Parker also saw, I believe Devontae Parker saw 7 targets. Jalen Waddle saw 6 targets. So Jalen Waddle had the second most target rate of the wide receivers in this offense. Now, the caveat here, And what we have to keep in mind when adjusting for Jaylen Waddle over the next couple weeks is, remember, Will Fuller had that week one suspension. So now we're going to add Will Fuller back into this offense, and we're going to have to see how things shake out with him. Now, I'm not super worried about Jaylen Waddle's workload. So he caught 4 receptions, I mentioned, on 6 targets. That feels very comfortable for me. I can see Jaylen Waddle comfortably holding that 6-7 target mark here over the next few weeks. I think the person who's going to end up getting hurt the most from Will Fuller coming back is Devontae Parker. I think they'll all end up getting theirs, but I think the key here, and one of the things that folks really undersold Jaylen Waddle on, is how high his volume can be. I've been projected out as a top 24 wide receiver this season, and if we maintain 6 targets here and a 66% catch rate, especially with his yards per reception average here, he's over 15 yards per reception. And even if Jaylen Waddle, you know, finds the end zone every other week of the season, we're going to be in a really good situation here with Jaylen Waddle. So I was really happy with the way that he looked in this offense. I will also point out here, in terms of overall snaps, in terms of his opportunity to be on the field, Jaylen Waddle and Devontae Parker both had 80% of the snaps. They were on the field 80% of the time for the offense. I expect that to continue here for Jaylen Waddle over the next couple weeks. Somebody who obviously has been kind of riding alongside Jaylen Waddle for his entire collegiate career, but onto this NFL storyline and narrative, is Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith, I will say, you know, I had him projected as a top 36 wide receiver, but Devontae Smith was one of these guys here who, you know, every time you flip on the tape, he looks so good. You look at his measurables, you know, in terms of athletic testing, it looks good, right? You plug him into the Philadelphia offense here. It looked good in my projections. Everything looked good, and I liked the player. But there's some players who, honestly, you know, all logic points you in a direction, and you're like, I'm going to trust that logic, but I need to see it. And I just didn't trust this Philadelphia Eagles offense. But we saw it. We saw it week one from Devontae Smith, and that is so exciting for me. 6 receptions is the key. That's volume. 6 receptions for Devontae Smith, 71 yards. So you can see if you're comparing him to Waddle still, it's a little bit lower yards per reception, but definitely still in a good range there. And he found the end zone. He found the end zone on a really nice play. Kind of an over-the-shoulder, good reaction to the ball. It was well placed by Jalen Hurts, but just the way the route was run, Smith had to kind of look over his shoulder and kind of catch it in the bucket there. It was a really nice catch. 8 targets along the way for Devontae Smith. He led the team in targets. He easily led the team in targets in production, by the way, until Jalen Reagor had that near garbage time touchdown there in the 4th quarter. If you pull that away, Devontae Smith was clear in a way the wide receiver being targeted by Jalen Hurts. It is wheels up on Devontae Smith. Now, obviously, at this point, if you have Devontae Smith, you're riding with him. You're not buying Devontae Smith at this point, right? This is really just, if you drafted him, you should feel good about this. Now, obviously, we're going to see this team progress here over the next couple weeks. Not every defense is going to be as easy to shred and find separation against as the Atlanta Falcons. But if there is somebody who I trust to lead this offense here, this passing attack, it's going to be Devonta Smith. I think Jalen Reagor can be a good option when defenses are pulled away by Devonta Smith, when they're a little bit too focused on Dallas Goedert, right? That is a good opportunity for Jalen Reagor, but I think Devonta Smith is going to be the guy that hurts targets when he gets in tough situations, and that's the guy that you're really going to want because that's a little bit more consistent volume. Now, I'll tell you what Ja'Marr Chase out of Cincinnati did not do. He didn't drop the ball. So many questions this preseason. Are we panicking on Ja'Marr Chase yet? Are we panicking on Ja'Marr Chase yet? This beat reporter said this. He dropped a ball in the preseason. He made a taken out of context quote about the size of NFL balls. So many just totally misleading, not helpful narratives on Ja'Marr Chase this offseason. So it was so validating to see Ja'Marr Chase Just do what he does. That big touchdown play, he stretched the field, he separated into the deep third of the field, and he made it look easy. Burrow to Chase is going to be a connection that we're going to be talking about for a while. You know, I think there's still legitimate question marks around Cincinnati if Ja'Marr Chase was the right pick over some more offensive line needs. But I think what's not a question is that Ja'Marr Chase is going to be a fantastic addition to this offense. 5 receptions, 101 yards, and a touchdown for Ja'Marr Chase. He led the team in 7 targets. Now, that's really key for Ja'Marr Chase, and I know they had another wide receiver go down in that game, but Ja'Marr Chase, if he is leading in targets, that is going to be a really important number to watch for, because I didn't expect him to lead the way in targets. I had him sitting third in that offense in targets, but I thought he was going to make up for it in touchdowns. So if he's leading in targets and touchdowns, then Ja'Marr Chase could be even better than we expected him to be. And I had him projected right outside of wide receiver one territory. You can go back one of the episodes in the 20s here. I fully focused on Ja'Marr Chase in the role that I thought he was going to have in this offense. How about this? 90% of the team snaps. This was a huge question mark when projecting the Bengals offense, and I think it's where a lot of folks went down the wrong track. You know, they looked at all the wide receivers in this offense, and I'm talking 4 or 5 deep. They have talented guys here, and the question mark was, like, how are you going to feed all these mouths? And the answer has always been that they're just going to throw the ball a whole heck of a lot. That's what this offense is built on. They're built on throwing the ball. That's the way they're going to open up the running game. It's not going to happen the other way around. And you know they need the running game opened up because they've invested a lot of money there into it. But it's clear here that the emphasis is going to start on the offense, and Ja'Marr Chase is going to be at the forefront of that priority list. So I hope we continue to see that moving forward. But it was definitely great to see Ja'Marr Chase find the end zone week 1 and silence a lot of those doubts about his hands. All right, let's move on here to the running back position. And like I said, we're not just talking about the biggest stat lines of the week. We got to dig in a little bit. And I have to tell you, I was very impressed about Kenny Gainwell. Now, there's a few reasons here. Kenny Gainwell, one, was somebody who I liked a lot as a day 3 prospect. It was an interesting roller coaster of analysis here for Kenny Gainwell at the beginning of the 2021 draft class. So, like, back at this time last year, I was kind of a Kenny Gainwell hater in the sense of a lot of folks wanted him to be a 1st or 2nd round draft pick. I never saw that from Kenny Gainwell. I always thought he'd be a really good day 3 draft pick, right? And obviously the opt-out pushed down his draft stock, and he kind of just fell into range. He fell into where I wanted him to be originally. So I have Kenny Gainwell in a bunch of spots. And I have to tell you, it's not only long-term. I invested in Kenny Gainwell in a lot of underdog best balls, right? So, you know, thinking of underdog, you get 18 spots. A lot of my 17th round, 18th round picks was Kenny Gainwell, and he definitely paid off right off the bat here. He had 9 rushing attempts, 37 yards, and he found that end zone. He found the touchdown here. Now, I will say, he only went 2 for 6 through the air, so he did get some targets through the air. But, you know, 6 yards, that's not too much. We need to find a way to find some room there and separate after the catch. But he played 40% of the snaps, which is really important to me because I think a lot of people were angling this offseason. All right, do we get Boston Scott in there? Who's the running back 2 for Philadelphia? I think it's really clear that Philadelphia is telling us that they want Kenny Gainwell to be the running back 2 on this offense. Now, it's the Miles Sanders show. And I want to emphasize that. Kenny Gainwell is not taking over Miles Sanders' job. A lot of folks are down on Sanders. I'm not down on Sanders. He still projects well for me this season. I think we saw that right off the bat. But if you are playing in deeper leagues and you need somebody in the flex spot, right? Just like I mentioned, in best ball, Kenny Gainwell is somebody who could be paying off for you over the next couple weeks. And I think that's really significant. And I think that's something that has been overlooked here in the narratives for folks that are, you know, really focusing on immediate impact, high production guys. They might be talking more about the wide receivers and not so much about guys like Kenny Gainwell who are slowly making an impact. And paying attention to trends like this is oftentimes how we find the most value. All right, here's the big one. We have to talk about this, and I'm going to bat here. I'm not backing down a smidge from Najee before the game, that if Najee Harris can make an impact in week 1, it would be super impressive. The Buffalo Bills defense is one of the best in the league. You know they have an emphasis on the running game or stopping the running game, and you knew that they would be locked in on that for Pittsburgh in this game. So Najee Harris, not the most significant stat line. 16 rushing attempts, 45 yards, doesn't find the end zone. So let's dig into this a little bit more. Now, remember, I projected Najee Harris out to be a running back one this season. So right off the bat, you might look at this and be like, I don't know what's going on. This doesn't look too good for Matt. But I'm not sweating it. I'm not nervous at all. All right. Every running back one is going to have a week or two like this per season. And the fact that he came against the Buffalo Bills, it doesn't frighten me at all. Because I'm going to look a little bit more into this. This is significant. Najee Harris, I mentioned 16 rushing attempts. That is 100% of the Steelers' rushing attempts from the running back position. I think Big Ben like fell forward by accident on one play and had a rushing attempt. But in terms of the running back rushing attempts, Najee Harris, 100% of the volume. I mentioned it. This was a slower game than the Steelers want to play. It was against a better defense than the Steelers are going to play most weeks. So if Najee Harris is moving forward with 100% of the weekly rushing volume, heck, give him 85% of the weekly rushing volume based on what we saw in this game. That means most weeks he's carrying the rock 23, 24, 25 times. That is going to be easy money once he starts shredding some of these weaker defenses here. He also had 100% of the team snaps. What rookie goes out there week one and has 100% of the team snaps? If you're on the field, you have the opportunity to score fantasy football points and produce for fantasy football managers. He's on the field 100% of the time. That is a good sign for me. I will say also, Najee Harris had red zone opportunities. Now, you might look at that and say, yeah, he wasn't able to get it done at the goal line. But in, I believe, maybe two specific examples. There was probably more where the Steelers were at about the 6-7 yard line and Harris was able to get them like 3 or 4 yards. He wasn't able to get the touchdown there, but he was getting the looks in the red zone there. And you know, hopefully once the defense is lighting up a little bit more, he's going to be able to more consistently find the end zone. So what am I saying here? Yeah, the production isn't there, but the biggest mistake fantasy football managers make is that they look backwards, right? They look at what a player has done in the past. You always want to be looking forward, projecting forward, and there's no better way to project forward than looking at volume. And Najee Harris has all of those signs that he is going to be just fine. So you're putting Najee Harris into your lineup next week. You're not pivoting off of Najee Harris. You're not selling early on Najee Harris. We are still all in on him. All right, another player whose stat line you may not have liked so much, and that's Kyle Pitts. All right, Kyle Pitts goes 4 for 31, 4 receptions, 31 yards, does not find the end zone. Quite frankly, he's a non-factor in this Atlanta Falcons offense. However, to be fair to Kyle Pitts, the Atlanta Falcons offense was a non-factor on its own. I gotta tell you, it's a little concerning overall. I'm speaking big picture here about the Atlanta Falcons offense. It's a little concerning that they were a non-factor against one of the worst secondaries in the league last year. Now, defensive turnover is so significant year to year that you don't want to get too caught up in looking at, you know, performances in the first couple weeks and saying that defense was garbage last year. How come my team didn't produce better? Because, you know, those units do change significantly year to year. So maybe Philadelphia is just a better defensive unit. We're certainly not hitting the panic button on Kyle Pitts quite yet. But I think a lot of folks who had bought into a much, much stronger narrative of Kyle Pitts left away with a salty taste in their mouth after week one. You know, you expected this tight end slash wide receiver hybrid, as he's being marketed, to be, you know, really more of a volume monster here, really be able to kind of take charge, take command of the offense. I think what's very clear is that it's still Calvin Ridley's offense, which was never in doubt. Even for folks who had the highest expectations of Kyle Pitts, I don't think anybody expected him to take command of the offense over Calvin Ridley. So looking into this a little bit more, the targets were the same. He did actually have 8 targets, the same as Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley produced at a higher rate. So you could look at that in a couple different ways. Volume is good, right? I just talked about that with Najee Harris. 8 targets, that's good for a rookie tight end. Week one from a veteran quarterback to trust him that much, that's a positive sign. 4 out of 8 catch rate, 50%. That's not what we were sold on Kyle Pitts, and that's fine. You know, the best wide receivers, if we're going to market him that way, the best wide receivers have down weeks. So again, we're not overreacting. Justin Jefferson did not produce in the last couple weeks of last season. So again, if you want to sell him on the wide receiver narrative, you know, there's still reason to not panic on Kyle Pitts. We're not panicking on anybody after week one. But 4 for 31, if he had gotten a touchdown in this game, if he had gone 4 for 31 and 1, it would have been exactly what I expected from Kyle Pitts. Remember, this is going to be a really good player in the NFL. My caution for him has always been that it's going to take a little bit of time. And so I think if you're playing in redraft with Kyle Pitts, maybe you have a little reason to be worried. If you're playing in long-term, even if you invested a pick higher than I would have recommended, you're not panicking on Kyle Pitts. We're hanging on here. It's going to be a long season. And don't worry, there's going to be plenty of those Kyle Pitts highlights here throughout the season for you to throw up and get really excited about here. You're going to be just fine. One thing I did want to mention about Kyle Pitts that I think is pretty relevant here, he had the same number of receptions as Hayden Hurst. I talked about this a lot, that Hayden Hurst, I didn't feel, was going out of this offense. It wasn't a one-for-one. I think they're going to use Hayden Hurst. I think they're going to use Kyle Pitts. And remember, Hayden Hurst is also an athletic tight end. He's not a super freak athletic tight end like Kyle Pitts, but he's a very athletic tight end. So he's definitely a pass catcher here. So they had the same amount of receptions. Kyle Pitts did have a higher target rate. I believe Hurst went 4 for 6, where Pitts went 4 for 8. Kyle Pitts did lead in snaps. He had 70% of the tight end snaps. So like I just mentioned, looking at volume and opportunity to be on the field, you got to be happy here with Kyle Pitts. All right, moving on here to another guy that I was generally lower on than consensus, Javonte Williams. And I got to tell you, if you look at the most recent rookie big board update, and remember for folks who are patrons, who have access to the rookie big board, I'm updating that consistently here. And I did a big update through preseason changes, and the adjustment that I made based on Travis Etienne's injury actually bumped Javonte Williams up to my running back too. So, you know, it's really important that my pre-draft tape score is in there, and you could see that Javonte Williams was not my running back two based on pre-draft tape score. But as, you know, the point of the rookie big board is to track value over time, and the rookie big board rating helps kind of keep me honest with that. And so Javonte Williams is actually up to running back two because of his projected production in this Denver Broncos offense. So again, a couple ways that you can look at Javonte Williams. He ends up with a stat line of 14 rushes, 45 yards, 0 touchdowns. That's not encouraging. That's not what you want to see. You know, that's somebody who's not able to really make his own space. That's somebody who's not able to do a lot on his own. But, you know, when you look at his opportunity, again, Javonte Williams was out there on the field. He had an even snap count with Melvin Gordon, which makes sense because I have these two projected almost even volume for the season. So they were out there. They had the same opportunity here. Melvin Gordon ends up getting 11 carries compared to Javonte Williams' 14. So he ends up getting less carries, but he significantly outproduces him. Melvin Gordon ends up getting 101 yards on 11 carries and 1 touchdown. Now, I know the instant reaction here is to point out that most of Melvin Gordon's yards did come on one play, which is accurate, but Melvin Gordon looked good on that one play. A lot of people have just kind of chalked up Melvin Gordon to be a dusty second contract running back, slow, unexplosive, just kind of there to run up the middle, get smashed at, and then Javonte Williams is going to come in and be that explosive, bursty guy. I think at least in week one, we saw the opposite of that happening. That doesn't mean that's going to be the trend moving forward. That doesn't mean Javonte Williams can't live up to that running back two position that he currently holds in the rookie big board rating. But at least for week one, you have to sit here and wonder if Melvin Gordon might, maybe he gets 60% of the snaps next week instead of, you know, 50, and maybe that keeps moving up, or maybe next week they both split 50% and Javonte Williams is the one who goes up over 100. Situation to track here over the next couple of weeks. All right, we're going to finish out here with two surprise guys that kind of really jumped on the scene. One, which I was very excited about, and I have to tell you, one that threw me by complete surprise. So we're going to start here with Anthony Schwartz out of Cleveland. I was so excited to see this. You know, looking through the draft process, you know, everything with Anthony Schwartz was, man, if he could just put it together. Ah, if Auburn just used him a little bit better. Like, look at the raw skills. Look at the speed. It's there. Look at the hand. Oh, the hands. The hands never quite came through. And you even saw that in week one. So Anthony Schwartz goes 3 for 69, no touchdowns here. And this is significant. 3 for 69 is a good stat line, specifically in the Cleveland Browns offense. You look at the type of role that a guy like Rashad Higgins has had over the last couple seasons, where he gets those deep plays. You know, we're kind of expecting Donovan Peoples-Jones to take that vertical field stretcher role from the Cleveland Browns offense. They have that guy, it seems, every year. And it looks like potentially week one, we saw that it might be Anthony Schwartz. Now, the reports coming out of camp, and who knows if this is, you know, really what was going on, but a lot of reports coming out of camp are that Cleveland, you know, they had the injury in the preseason, and they were kind of just trying to keep Anthony Schwartz under wraps a little bit, kind of temp down the hype on him a little bit, just to kind of have like an extra hidden surprise element early on in the season. And if that was the case, they did well. All right, you can see on the graphic, I couldn't even get a game shot of Anthony Schwartz. I had to get the practice shot, all right, because we just haven't seen that much of him. But 3 for 69 is really good. If you can find that end zone, that's fantastic. You know, you're looking at a guy, Anthony Schwartz, if you took him in best ball leagues, I mean, I think I have him in 2 best ball leagues. You know, you're looking at DCA 3, the Dynasty Community League 3, which is just the rookie best ball kind of setup. Anthony Schwartz was a killer this week. You know, these are the types of guys that could make a real big impact. Now, I will say, proceed with a little bit of caution. Playing seasonal, don't go out chasing Anthony Schwartz. Remember, Odell Beckham Jr. was a late out in this game. The Cleveland Browns passing attack generally is not a super high volume passing attack. So don't overreact to this. But from a dynasty perspective, it's really encouraging to see. The one thing I will say, the one big play that Anthony Schwartz had that probably jumps out to a lot of people, it's a vertical route along the sideline. He's kind of just running in a straight line. He beats the defender. He finds some space. And but you look at it, before he caught that ball clean, he bobbled it a little bit. He did recover. He caught the ball. It was a clean catch, but he bobbled it a little bit. And I thought that one play was a perfect microcosm of Anthony Schwartz at Auburn. Fast, creating separation, but the hands were never quite there. He ran a simple vertical route, you know, which is fine. There's plenty of folks in the NFL that can get away with running 3 routes really well. So I'm not knocking Anthony Schwartz on that, but just something to keep in mind. I thought that one play in particular was a really interesting microcosm of his entire collegiate career. And of course, we have to finish out with the rookie of the week. All right, we're giving out the gold star here, the rookie big board gold star to Elijah Mitchell. I mean, how could you not? 19 rushes, 104 yards, and a touchdown. Elijah Mitchell came out of nowhere. Such a difficult player to evaluate on tape. And this was something that was really interesting. And I got to give kudos to the analyst that picked up on this. I am not going to sit here and tell you that I was super high on Elijah Mitchell coming out. If you look at the rookie big board, he jumped up to 26. He was one of the only folks that moved, and I'll get into that a little bit here in a second. He jumped up to 26th overall on the rookie big board after week one. Before that, he was in the 50s. I'm just going to be honest with you what my evaluation was on Elijah Mitchell. He wasn't somebody I identified as an impact player this year. Now, certainly Raheem Mostert going down helps Elijah Mitchell be a week one performer. Trey Sermon being a healthy scratch helps Elijah Mitchell be a week one performer. So there were factors that you could not properly anticipate to be able to say going into last week that Elijah Mitchell was going to be the gold star rookie big board rookie of the week, as I am anointing him here. But he got his opportunity. He got it done. He absolutely shredded there the Detroit defense. Now, again, remember, the Detroit defense, that's going to be a weaker defense than probably Elijah Mitchell is going to run against. But still, he ends up getting 19 of the team's 28 carries. So what's going to happen now? Raheem Mostert is going to be out for the season. So Trey Sermon will be active. You know, maybe we're looking at a 50 to 55% of touches for Elijah Mitchell. Sermon starting off here with another 30. And then, you know, don't forget about Jermichael Hasty. I like Jermichael Hasty a ton coming out. He is stashed on a lot of my dynasty rosters. So don't forget about Jermichael Hasty. Don't forget, when Trey Lance takes over that job full-time, he'll be running the ball more, so part of that running workload will go towards Trey Lance. So there's a lot of factors to consider here, but what I will say here is that Elijah Mitchell was difficult to evaluate in college because he's kind of a bigger guy. He's about 200 pounds, if I'm remembering correctly, but he's fast and bursty, but and he's good in space, but he played in an offense, La Tech there, that didn't create space consistently. So it was really difficult if you weren't relying on athletic testing to really get a good grasp of how fast he was playing against group of five guys in a power-based offense when he's not really a power-based runner. So for those folks that did point it out, kudos, good for you. That was not me. But we're ready to adjust the rookie big board. I mentioned he's up to, I believe, 26th on the rookie big board. Now, I want to point out, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, and I've said it pretty consistently throughout the episode, that we're not overreacting here to the first couple weeks of the season. However, Elijah Mitchell was the biggest mover because when Raheem Mostert went down, part of the rookie big board rating is seasonal projection. So I plugged Elijah Mitchell in, and I'm not giving him 100% of the offense here. Trey Sermon, I think, is still going to play a part. If you drafted Trey Sermon, you'll be fine. He's going to play a part in this offense, but Elijah Mitchell is going to play his part as well. So when we updated his opportunity index score based on my 2021 season projections, Elijah Mitchell jumped into still what I would consider an early third round rookie pick. All right, if we redid the draft right now, because again, I think he's splitting this backfield. I don't think he goes 19 for 104 and a touchdown every single week. I think in most weeks, we're probably looking at 14 for 73. And if he finds it the end zone that week, that's going to be a good week for you. If he doesn't find the end zone that particular week, it's not going to be a great week to play Elijah Mitchell. So we're going to proceed with a little bit of caution. We're not going all out here on Elijah Mitchell just yet, but absolutely somebody whose value increases. If you get a really good draft pick offer for Elijah Mitchell, like if somebody comes at you with a first round pick in 2022 for Elijah Mitchell, you're flipping that immediately. 2023 first round pick, you're flipping that immediately. 2022 second round pick, if you got running back depth, flip that, right? That is still where we're at with Elijah Mitchell, but that's not taking anything away from him. It was a really great performance there from Elijah Mitchell. I appreciate you listening into this episode of the Rookie Big Board. As always, remember, patreon.com/theffeducator. That is where you can get access to the Rookie Big Board, my Devy rankings, my college football weekly notes, my weekly rookie notes, as well as my dynasty rankings. And you can already get an early look at the 2022 Rookie Big Board. This will be the last Rookie Big Board episode here for about a month as I take some time for my wedding, my honeymoon. I'm very excited to do that. We're going to take about a month back from the mic, but I will be back here in October, ready to break down rookies and ready with a whole ton of information. By mid-October, we're going to be able to analyze some significant trends here with this rookie class. And I got to tell you, I already have an eye on the 2022 rookie class. So we are all in here. It is a great time to be a part of the community. Patreon.com/theffeducator. As always, I appreciate you listening.